This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is Martin Spriggs, and it's February 24th, Tuesday afternoon, 4 o'clock, episode 381, show about technology and ministry. We're really happy that you joined us today, and I'm alongside my normal partner from the hailing from the deep south, but living in the Midwest, in frigid Midwest. Hi, Sally.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Martin. My deep south friends are pretty frigid too.
Are they?
Feel for them because they've had some really cold temps for down there, and some icy stuff, which is no fun down there. They're not real prepared.
My daughter lives in she doesn't live in the south, but gets closer to the south, southern Indiana. They had no school last week, basically.
Wow. Serious stuff. I just got to put a plug in, since you said Deep South, it rang a bell with me. My friend Mark Bergerman put out on Facebook yesterday a Gallup poll. We should get it on the show. I'll find a link and include it next week. But it was the most church attendance around the country. And Mississippi was number 2 on the list. Woot, woot for Mississippi.
So all those Baptists.
And Methodists, yeah. But yeah. Definitely down in the Bible Belt down there, and that's a good thing, finally, for Mississippi to be at the top of the list of. So.
Of something, yes.
That's right.
Well, I'm sure they're famous for other things, other than Sally Draper.
But. Yeah.
That voice you also hear in the background is your cue that we're not alone, and this is our classroom technology-focused show, and we're joined by Gail Potratz. Hi, Gail.
Hello, everybody. Good to see you.
How are you?
I am doing just fine. I have a broken foot that's on the mend. I'm getting along much better now. No crutches, no wheelchair. So other than a little soreness in my foot, I tell myself when it gets to be truly spring, it'll all be just a memory.
Technology is a dangerous game. You get broken things, and you just got to be careful around those things.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with technology.
Well, we're glad you're on the mend, and we're glad that you you can sit at least in front of a computer for an hour here and talk about technology. And you are the perfect person to join us because we are revisiting a topic we talked about maybe a year and a half ago, but maybe a little bit different flavor in our back to school. You know, Wells Tech goes back to school segment. We're talking about language arts, and we're going to go from top to bottom, or bottom to top, or end to end, however you want to talk about it. Early childhood all the way through high school, because there is, and just looking at the list here, a wealth of material. You're talking about language arts and digital resources. So where do we start, ladies?
Well, just like you said, Martin, we have resources from early childhood on, so I think early childhood might be a great place to start.
Start with the little tykes.
Yeah, Gail, this was fun for you, I guess, because you don't necessarily teach early childhood.
No, I don't. Although I will say, when I had my broken foot, the little kids, the littlest kids in the school, were so nice and so kind. And when I was in the wheelchair, I was like right at their level. So going down the hallway with them was fun. But I don't teach them very often. But I do know that Starfall is a big hit with the early childhood teachers, and I think you know something about that one, Sally.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that we definitely want to feature in this segment. And Starfall is all about those early reading skills. So
it has nothing to do with James Bond.
No.
Okay. Learn to read with phonics and mathematics. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's easy to do. The children can play on the site without joining, but as a teacher, you can join, and there's extension type resources and things available to you. And it goes pretty much pre-K up through maybe late first grade, early second grade, where they're doing some reading skills online. And I'll say some of my older students, when I would share this in the classroom, they enjoyed it as well. So the I'm reading area is good for third and fourth graders too at times. So just really good phonics drill. There's stories and things that they can create themselves, and it's very interactive and fun. And I've heard some teachers just really use it as a supplement to their early reading lessons and things. So that's starfall.com. One other one that has a lot of those similar types of games and things and is very geared toward the early or lower elementary grade levels is ABCYA. It's ABCYA.com. And again, you can go into your grade level, and it's always fun when you introduce this to students, because maybe the kindergartners go into the kindergarten grade level and they play all these cool alphabet games, and then there's math games as well, you know, and they work their way through things that are here, and they look at each other's and see which ones, you know, someone else is playing. But inevitably you get the question, can I do the first grade games, you know, because they want to move up, and they're excited about, as a kindergartner, that they could jump to the first grade level and do some new things that are there. And so I think it's a really fun challenge for the students to see the grade levels and you know, have that desire to move on up.
I think the kindergartners in the lab do this quite often, and I just saw that in action. They were looking, somebody was playing a train game, and that was the discussion, well, can we play that one? Because that's grade whatever. So, but they did. They got to play it, and they were quite excited about that. So there's a lot of choices on that one.
Definitely, and there's a lot of others, particularly around the educational television programming that's available. PBS has a really extensive website with extension games and things around their television shows. One show, I'm not sure if it's still on, my boys used to watch it when they were young, and they're quite old now, but is Between the Lions. It was a really great reading show, a lot of fun, and they have a great website with great games and things that help with those phonics skills and such. So Between the Lions is one that comes to mind. Other children's books, like the Clifford book series, they have a great website where you can learn to read their books and things. So lots of those things out there to just kind of extend from the reading that you're already doing at that grade level or that age level and allow them to have fun with it as well.
Great. So it seems like these are website-based, correct? So we're not kind of dipping into apps or, you know, iOS or Android kinds of things, but specific for websites. Maybe they are mobile-friendly, but predominantly websites. Is that right?
The ones we mentioned so far are websites, but there's another one on the list, too, that's there's a lot of apps, of course, for the little kids too. The Show Me app that's on the list for the younger, and then I'm going to talk about it in an older section later on. I like that one. That's an app. Unfortunately, that one is just iOS, but it's really good because kids can speak and draw at the same time, so they can illustrate and tell you what they're showing you. It's a nice way to check some learning skills that go on and just have kids just enjoy showing you what they know. So, and that's an app. So
you're engaging different senses and different ways to learn too, right?
Yeah. You can also put a picture, like the teacher can import a picture. Well, the kids could too, but on the younger side, the teacher can import the picture, and then the kids can talk about and circle or draw or whatever over the top of the picture as the background. There's a lot you can do with that. So there's certainly a lot of apps that we could mention with the younger kids too, yes.
So and probably just, moving on up to lower elementary.
Yeah.
What do we got there?
The first one that I see on the list that I marked was is called the Global Read Aloud. And this is a teacher, Pernell Rip, her name is, and she's in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. She developed this. It's grown. It's huge. It's worldwide. The reason I bring it up is I like to connect kids outside the walls of New London. There, we have students here that don't go very far and don't have a lot of experience, you know, in faraway states, much less other countries. So I like to connect them with people as many times as I can, whether it's around pond water or reading a book or whatever subject we're working on here. But this Global Read-Aloud, what it does is it teachers actually are involved in picking the author for the year, and then the kids read a bunch of books by that same author, and they vote for the favorite book of that author. They've had Eric Carle 1 year. This year we're still deciding between. There's two ladies that we're deciding between, and I'm not familiar with either one of them. These are primarily picture book authors. However, there are people that teach in the upper grades that are also interested in picture books. You can learn a lot from picture books and in many ways and connect them to different traits and whatnot. So I think teachers, just because it's about picture books, doesn't really limit, you know, you to lower grade teachers.
But, what's the read aloud angle of this?
Well, it's just that the teachers read the books aloud to the kids.
Okay.
And then the kids are online discussing the books or talking about the books, what books they read, you know, and what they liked about the books, what the characters were like in the books. They talk about all the usual book kind of things, but they're talking to people outside their classroom about them.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sometimes they draw pictures and scan pictures and send them to each other to show something about the book. But we have not done it yet. This year's our first year participating, and so it really starts like in the fall. So we're just going through the getting ready part of it now for next year.
I have one for grades 1 through 4 as well that I wanted to share. It's from the Scholastic website, and it's called Story Starters. And it actually, you can do it, I think they even say, from kindergarten on. So the kids are allowed to, are encouraged to pick a genre that they want to write about, fantasy or whatever, and then put in their name and grade level. And then once they do, they get to spin a wheel for portions of their story. And it stops, it's kind of like a slot machine. And I have a prompt for a story, write a nursery rhyme about a giant wolf who has the strength of 500 people. And so I have it. If I want to change any portion of it, I can. And when I'm happy with it, I can click next and decide what format I want to write. Once I select a format, whether it's a postcard or a newspaper article or whatever, I'm given an interface to write my story. And I can print it and have a story. So it's just a really great writing prompt kind of website and a lot of fun for the kids. So
there's another.
And what happens to it once you're done? What is it published then, or is it shareable? What happens?
I think it's just printable, if I remember correctly. You can add more pages to it and things like that. You can have areas to draw on, that kind of thing. But then I think that ultimately when you're done, you're able to print it. It shows you what it looks like, and you can click the print button.
Cool.
So what do you think their favorite genre is, Sally?
Well, the boys all like pirate stories.
Right.
And,
because they never pick historical fiction, which is my favorite.
Yeah. Print or download, that's your options at the very end. So.
Now, pirates could be historical fiction.
Well, that's true. While you're on that one, Sally, and since we kind of slighted the apps last time around, there's an app called Story Wheel, and that does the same thing as this site. It's not by Scholastic, but it's called Story Wheel. And you spin the wheel, and so it's the luck of the draw what you get. But you can go into categories, like you mentioned pirates. Pirates is a category on that. But that's one of those, if you want that one, you have to pay more. It's past the free part of the site, so we've never done the pirates. But I know.
Pirates are extra.
Yes, they are.
The boys want you to pay.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. But that's another kind of a very comparable one if you're into apps more than. And we use it on the iPad. I don't know if it's also Android or not.
Okay. Gail, you had highlighted the Wonderopolis website. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Wonderopolis.
Sure, I would love to. Wonderopolis is one of my favorite sites on the whole web. I put it under lower elementary just because I knew less to put down there. But it could easily be put at upper elementary too. I used it in 7th and 8th grade a lot last year. This year, haven't had the chance to work it in. But what it is it's a site that you go to, and every day they publish a new question, something to find out something about. Yesterday it was about gasoline. Where do you get gasoline? You know, everybody's talking about the price of gas. What is gas? Where does it come from? How does it get here? And so every day there's a new one. And they keep the archive, so you can actually go back and pull one from the past that you really liked or that speaks to the topic more if you want to. But what this does is this helps kids get to the idea of figuring out essential questions. It has a lot to do with the whole the learning theory, that the inquiry method of learning, and the idea that if you can get kids to ask the right questions, then you will get them to learn what it is you want them to learn, or what they want to learn. So first you watch a little video. There's always a video, and at least this is how I do it. There might be a better way that you could figure out, but we look at the video first of all. We watch the video, and then underneath the video, there's a whole big long thing in text with words underlined, and the words are on the side defined and all of that stuff. But we don't even read it. We watch the video, then we go over to the side, and there are there's a photo gallery, and in the photo gallery, we look at the pictures that are there, because the pictures might suggest questions. And our goal is to come up with some good questions that we want to answer. The video is just kind of an interest grabber. It doesn't give you all the answers. It just is an interest grabber. So we're trying to get kids to set the questions. And the pictures do that, or sometimes they come up with them on their own. So we call it down to some good questions that we'd like to know about gasoline. Then we go ahead and read the stuff under the picture. And there is an audio button, so if you do it in lower grade levels or for people who are, you know, need to do the reading out loud, you can listen to it or read it, either way. So then after we've read the information, we hope that we can answer all our questions. But the point of it really isn't to answer the questions. The point of it really is to get kids to phrase good questions, because that's really an important part of learning, is to be able to figure out what it is you want to know. So that's basically what it is in a nutshell. It's great. Everybody should have that in their toolbox.
That's I'll tell you a little story. We went over to Debbie and I went over to Michigan over the weekend on Monday, because I had some meetings at Michigan Lutheran Seminary. And on the way over on Sunday, we visited a couple of wineries. That's kind of one of our kind of pastimes. And we were introduced to one of the wineries there that kind of their claim to fame was sherry. And we never ever tried sherry before, so. And we bought a bottle of sherry to try or to bring home and really enjoyed it. But the all the way home, or half the way home, I should say, we had kind of this quest to find out what sherry was. Just we never drank it. We never knew what it was. We knew kind of all the ins and outs of sherry. So it's kind of our own little quest. The trick was, Debbie was on her computer and we had our MiFi, so we were on the internet asking Google the right questions. What is sherry doesn't get you actually the right answer. So you have to say, how is it made? And then we found out, well, it's a mixture of wine and brandy. So we said, well, what's brandy and how that's made? So we probably traveled, half the state of Michigan and all the way through Indiana, just kind of question after question and kind of trying to come up with the right questions and get the right research done to get to our answers. And that's kind of what this tool reminds me of. That is kind of analytical thinking, and that's a real good life skill, not just learning about sherry, but learning about lots of things, because there is so much information out there, and you can't just type in something and expect Google to give you the answer. You have to kind of be a researcher, and that's kind of what it seems like that's what this app does very well. So
setting you up to be a good researcher is an excellent way to put it. And by the way, did you visit the Tabor Hills Winery?
Well, that was one that we did, yeah.
That's awesome. My old stomping grounds when we were in Bend,
right.
Harbor. We visited that a few
Who
times.
Knew? They call it the Napa of the Midwest. You know,
yes.
Area.
So, oh, yes.
Very cool. It was under snow, a lot of snow.
A lot of good lake effect snow. We used to have a lot of snow days over there.
That's apparently why the grapes grow nicely over there. They get that snowpack that keeps them insulated. But I learned a lot. So
excellent.
We should probably move on. Any other apps or websites in the lower elementary section?
I guess I'll make just a quick mention of spellingcity.com. I know a lot of teachers are aware of this site and the fact that you can pay for a membership here and do lots and lots of variations of your spelling drills throughout the week and your testing and things. So they have a lot of fun games associated with learning your spelling words and things like that. So if you're looking for a solution for spelling, you might want to check out spellingcity.com.
Oh, and I see one more I have to mention. It isn't even colored, but I need to mention this one. Explain Everything. And that's not that's an app, and that's not new, but what's great about that is it's kind of like Show Me. But what's great about it is this is one that works really well if teachers are just starting to do a kind of a flipped classroom idea. Teachers can create a lot of things on Explain Everything and use it as their take-home homework to get kids prepped for the next day for the concept that they're going to be working on. So that's worth taking a look at if you're interested in that kind of thing.
And that looks like iOS only?
No, I don't think so, because I use it.
Okay, that's what we marked it. Okay, good. Explain Everything. Let's move on to upper elementary or middle schoolers.
Sally, you can start because my map bombed out on me here. I have to restart the map.
Okay, I'm happy to talk about kidblog.org, which is a really safe and simple blog for your students, just like they say. And what's nice about it is the back end of kidblog.org is actually WordPress, which is a very popular website / blogging platform these days. So if you've done anything with WordPress, it's going to look super familiar to you, but they take care of all the security and they really lock it down tightly and then let you peel back security layers if you want it to be more open. So initially, for instance, all the comments have to come to you and all the blog posts have to come to you. So the students can't just post something on their blog without your approval. You're kind of set up in an approval role as the teacher. And that's nice. It also is totally private, so only the students with their logins to write blogs can actually see the blogs that are being created by the other students. So if you want it to make it viewable, perhaps, more widely, you could do that by backing off on some of the security settings. You could also just set up a login for the parents,
right,
so that the parents can see the blogs and not really make it public, but give the parents codes and things to put in to see the blogs and stuff. And even if you do that, you can still limit the commenting aspect of it to just the students in the classroom or whatever. So the actual viewing of it doesn't mean that they can comment on it even. So lots of really easy to manipulate security associated with kidblog.org that gives you as a teacher a comfort level that we can do this. Now, why would you use it? Perhaps you have your students writing journals every day for 5 minutes at the beginning of class. We'll instead have them pull out their Chromebooks and blog their journal entries using kidblog.org. That's just one example. Any kind of creative writing or anything like that is possible to purpose a blog for that. And you can also use it year to year and see, you know, kind of the continuum of their work over time if your school adopts Kid Blog as your platform. So great tool for starting blogging with your students, kidblog.org.
Okay, I'll jump into another upper elementary. I use this with I'm using it right now with 5 through 8. Another kind of a sort of a global outreach is the Dorothy Canfield Fisher book contest that they have each year. And so a couple months ago, I dressed up like Dorothy Canfield Fisher, who I didn't have a clue who she was until this year. But she was a lady back in the day who was a kind of a pioneer in bringing the Montessori school over to America, for one thing. She was an author. She wrote some fiction, but she wrote a lot of nonfiction. And she was outspoken in a lot of women's rights and children's rights and whatnot. But very well known for her work in literature, as far as not just writing it, but also being on the committee to pick the, when they used to have the, what did they call it? The book that came out, the Book of the Month Club. Which was a huge thing before we had, you know, all the things we have to do today for entertainment. That was kind of huge. Mm-hmm. And she was the person who picked the books. Anyway, so what we do with this is there's 30 books that are selected. They're not all written by her. They're written by a lot of different authors. But there's 30 books that have been chosen by a group of librarians across the country. And then those books are put out, and then kids read these 30 books, and the kids, then there's a blog, and they talk with each other. There's several blogs. Some of the blogs they can do activities on. Some of them they just talk with kids who've read the same book as they have. And so they have conversations around the literature that they're reading outside the walls of our school. And, of course, we have them inside as well, but nice to go outside and see who we can find to talk to. And then at the end, we're getting to almost next month, April, we get to vote on the best book out of the 30. So the kids that have read them then choose the book of the year for this Dorothy Canfield Book Club thing. So we have a big bulletin board with all the books, and we mark who's read which books, and we're each making a poster of our favorite book, and I have one boy who's trying to read all 30 of them, and we just started. I should have started it sooner. I really didn't think it would take off as well as it did. I just was going to do it for a quarter, because I like to do something different every quarter, but really, I could have done this with a lot of them, at least for, you know, at least a semester, because the kids' interest was huge. So when the kids are that interested and they're reading that many books, I think that's great. So this is my website that you see, but connected to it are all kinds of resources, which each year will introduce you. There's a Prezi that goes through all the books. And the first day we talked about it, then the next day we went online and we looked at YouTube videos of all the books. And the kids were just, I get that one. They were just so excited. I've never seen them that excited about, you know, starting a book project. So this was a real find for me, and I guess it's around all the time, but I had never heard about it before. I just happened to stumble across it. So I wanted to make sure I passed that one along.
Yeah, and listeners will want to check out our new resource page, Wells Tech Goes to School, for all of these links and a lot more, because we don't even begin to have enough time to talk about all the things that we've pulled together for language arts resources. A couple of more in the upper elementary category. We have Flowcabulary. I think we've talked about that on the podcast before. Educational Hip Hop, it's titled, and they have a lot of kind of rap versions of catchy things to remember about grammar or whatever, your writing styles, things like that. Gail, you have some memorized, huh?
Yeah.
Near and dear to you, huh?
The five things. The literary elements. Plot, character, setting, yes.
Wow, Gail can rap. How about that?
You could too if you heard it once. It's very repetitive.
Flowcabulary is the site for that. Others, you know, grammar drills, some tools. Gail, I guess we have a lot of mixture here where we are talking about content versus tools to create content. And so there's things like Voki that we want to list, and VoiceThread, and PictoChart, where you can create infographics and things. So for those book reports or whatever it is that your students are working on, there's tools for creating as well. So lots of options in these categories.
Yep. I have one more that I really want to show if I can here, and that's my my version of Google Lit Trips, because I think that's a really, really powerful thing to do with kids. So I have it up on my screen, so I'm going to see if that's okay, if I can get this one up here.
You should. You definitely can go for it. The green icon will be your friend.
Okay, I hope so.
There it goes.
You see it?
I see it, yes.
All right. All right, so this is an example. Google Lit Trips is a site of itself, and the thing about Google Lit Trips is it's pretty hard for the average student to make their way through it and set up a Google Lit Trip, and their files are very proprietary just to their own because it's through Google Earth. And I find it great but too hard for most people. So I kind of make my own version of Google Lit Trips, and I just use Google Maps. And of course, not all books are going to work, but like I said, historical fiction is my favorite. So we just finished reading earlier this year Johnny Tremaine. So the kids make a map, you know, use Google Maps. So we're on Google Maps. We're looking at their map of Boston. And they had to, as they read the book, figure out which 10 place marks they would put on the map of Boston so that people could go around and learn about the book from their place mark. So I'm going to open up one place mark and see. You can see all the language art skills you can get out of this project. You do everything. So Copp's Hill, and that was a picture I actually took when I was in Boston on the Freedom Trail, so they didn't even have to. Oh, no, they used somebody else's because they did cite it. I give them all my pictures because I try to, you know, I don't want them to have to worry about all the crediting because there's too many other things to think about. But they didn't like mine. I guess they got their own here. So there's Copp's Hill, which is the real place, one of the oldest cemeteries. So the first part, they write about that picture and, you know, the actual place that they have marked on the map. And some, of course, are harder to do than others, but Copp's Hill is an easy one. Then the second paragraph that they write is all about how this pertains to the story. What does Copp's Hill have to do with the story? So they have to retell significant things that happened in the story, and this person did a really nice job. And then finally, they have to come up with two discussion questions that they have at the end of the place mark. So literally somebody, you could take somebody through these 10 place marks and they should pretty well get the idea of the book, Johnny Tremaine. And you can do that. Historical fiction works great, especially when it's, you know, in one nice little city like this. This is just the ideal book to do it with. But tons of language arts skills involved and a lot of technology. So I love it, and the kids really did love it too. So I wanted to make sure that I shared that one.
Super. Looks nice. Looks like they did an awesome job there.
They did.
So before we leave language arts, we have to talk about the big kids, high school age.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have one in particular. I know that some of the things we'd want to move into with language arts at the high school level are things associated with bibliographies, citing sources, being very particular about style and things. And there are tools out there to help with that, bibme.org or EasyBib, which integrates right with your Google Docs. Another site I wanted to mention for the high school level is 60 Second Recap, which is a site with videos that talk about different components of classical literature. So I have the Great Gatsby open, for instance, and they have a video on the introduction, an overview of it, the main characters, the plot, and all of these are really short little vignettes that walk people through kind of a Cliff Notes version of The Great Gatsby, but they might be very good discussion starters if you used them as you begin to dig in deeply into the plot or the symbolism or whatever it might be. They might be good discussion starters that you could expand upon with your high school students. And there's a good number of the classics covered here. We'll actually have an example of one of the 60-second recaps at the end of the show when we talk about our video of the week. Good site.
Nice. One app that I wanted to mention, which we've talked about in the past, was Hemingway app. This is probably not just for high schoolers. It could be used in middle school level as well. But basically what it is, it's a analytical tool that allows you to plug in your writing, and it will basically tell you how readable it is. It'll grade it based on our it will set what grade level is necessary to read it. It will kind of flag run-on sentences, overuse of adverbs, make some suggestions, talk about passive voice, kind of the blocking and tackling, I think, of good writing. So I did a little bit of a risky thing just while you were talking, Sally, as I plugged in my last blog post, which is part of a series of devotions for families on Christian stewardship. I had written it, you know, many years ago now, but I've just been republishing them. So I put in the last one here, and just to see how it would play out. And grade 5 is the reading level, which is actually what I was hoping for, because it's supposed to be kind of a family devotion. My only issue is I use too many adverbs, which is a characteristic of weak writing. Should all be about the verbs, is what my wife tells me.
That's right.
So if you use a lot of adverbs, that means you got to think about some stronger verbs. So maybe I'll rework this one and try and get rid of some of those adverbs out of there. But by and large, I'm pretty happy with the results. But I think this is a good analytical tool for somebody to plug in their writing. I wouldn't maybe take it as gospel always, but I think it's probably a good starting point for the, you know, kind of a quick and dirty evaluation of some of your writing, at least for grade level, and ultimately flag some of those gotchas that you'll get with common writing. So that's Hemingway app.
And that kind of covers all those grade levels. And like I said, we just scratched the surface with the apps we have to list on the website. So if you want to head on over to our show notes at wellstech.wells.net, we'll have a link to our resource page, Wells Tech Goes to School. This is the second in our series. Next month, we're going to go back to school for science and social studies at all different grade levels. So be sure to tune in then.
Cool. Let's move on to quick news in tech, and actually I should have just kept sharing my screen there. So I wanted to share a little bit of news about one of my absolute favorite applications, and that's OneNote. I've talked about it a number of times, and good news on the OneNote front, which is a Microsoft product that comes with the Office suite, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook. OneNote is right in there, a note-taking app. It is now even what the title of the blog post is, it's now even more free. It had been free, but it had restricted some of the features for the premium version, including password protection, versioning, that kind of thing, the ability to embed files, the ability to do audio and video recording, audio search. Now all that is free as well. It's a really good deal, really good application. You need a free Microsoft account to take advantage of it, because that's where it stores the files in the cloud, and a free Microsoft account will give you 15 gigabytes of OneDrive space, and that's plenty for stuff like this. I use this for almost everything, to capture content for projects and notes, meeting notes, those kinds of things. I was using it all day yesterday when I was out visiting the good folks at Michigan Lutheran Seminary, taking notes. Just wanted to make you aware that it is available now, and they've got a good blog post how to get it downloaded, how to get using it. OneNote.com/download is the place to go. It works on Windows 7 or Windows 8, OneNote 2013. So that's our news in tech. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail is our guest host. Fire when ready.
All right. My pick of the week, which I'll See, Sally, did you have it there, or do you want me to try to pull it up?
I can open it for you, no problem.
Okay. I'll start talking while you're doing that. All right, sure. My pick of the week is not anything super fantastic, but it gives me a chance to talk about an idea. What it is it's a website that I found when I was searching for the solution to a problem, which happens a lot. Chromebooks, a problem that we've had on and off is the sound all of a sudden goes. Usually when you're trying to use headphones, a headset. And so there's nothing more frustrating when you're trying to accomplish something than when it's bad enough when it happens to one person, but then all of a sudden three people have this problem. And so my thing is always, I like to teach kids how to troubleshoot their own problems as much as possible. So we have what we call the toolbox, and it's just a website, and I take things we find that can help troubleshoot things, and I collect them in there, and I teach kids how to do this. And this was just a good example that came up this very week, so I thought, well, I'll talk about this and share that idea. The idea that you can go down this, the Fake Geek is the name of the website, and he just happened to have an answer to this problem. And he goes through steps, like about 8 steps. If this doesn't work, try this. If that doesn't work, then try this. If that doesn't work, then try this. And we tried this, and we only had to go through the first few steps, and everybody's problem was solved. So that means that this goes into the toolbox because it's one that actually works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the next time something like that happens, the kids even will remember, oh, yeah, they remember better than I do. Oh, yeah, we did learn how to fix that. We've done this before. And somebody will come up with, you know, the solution, usually before I pull it out and have to look it up again. So I just think it's a great thing that they can be quick about solving their own problems and save you. You don't have to always be thinking about that. You can keep your mind on the educating that you're trying to do with the computers. So this is an example of a good site that allows kids to do that. And I'm going to guess that if you have Chromebooks, you probably have had this same problem at least once before. And if it's frustrated you, here's a good step-by-step list to go through to solve your problem.
Great.
Excellent.
Nice tip.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My turn, Martin?
The lady from the South has the floor.
Are you ready for this? This is courtesy of my dear husband, Kevin, who was reading his Popular Mechanics magazine this week and was aware of an ongoing debate we have here on the Wells Tech podcast about watches. And it just so happens there was an article in Popular Mechanics that says, "Your phone is not your watch." It says, and I quote, "For generations, if you ask a man the time, he'd snap his arm out to full length so the cuff of his shirt pulled back a little, and then bend his arm at the elbow and glance down at the watch on his wrist. 4:15, he'd say. The whole thing took about a second. Here too often is what he does now. He shoves his hand in his pants pocket or into the folds of his suit jacket beneath his overcoat, fishing for his telephone, which he produces and holds in front of his face. Then he pushes the button, and the time pops up on the screen, and he says, 3:46. This is no way to tell time. It is inefficient. And by the way, some people are productivity experts, so this should really ring a bell with you guys. It wastes time, which is the thing you're worried about in the first place. Otherwise, you wouldn't need to know what time it is. Plus, it's inelegant. A man without a watch looks unprepared, like a man who has to check his wallet to see whether he has any cash. A man should always have cash. Your phone tells the time, yes, but your phone is not a watch. You need a watch.
Good one.
That rests my case.
What did
you say? I missed
now,
it.
Now, if it had come from GQ, I would have more attention.
I just couldn't resist, Martin. I saw that, and for some reason, I thought of you and Rob Gunther.
And hey, you can see that I am actually wearing a real watch today.
A real watch. Yes. How about that? And so that originally, when we had this conversation, that would have put you in the category of something like dinosaur, I believe, is what you called me. But anyway, not to, you know, rehash any of that or anything.
Boy, she carries a grudge, doesn't she?
I just felt so validated by this article and wanted you to enjoy it with me. So, and I did pin it on our Pinterest board in case
go
you
to
want
the
to source. Reference.
Yeah, Popular Mechanics. That's your fashion digest.
And productivity, I might add, since we're concerned about productivity.
All right. My pick. Can I do my pick now, Sally? Is it time?
I don't know. Maybe I should revel in it a little more.
Quarter to five here, according to my time sheet.
Let's get going.
My pick is actually a lot like Gail's. It's a couple of fix-it sites. This one's kind of cool because it's a blog post called Be Your Own Genius. It's a blog written by, actually this article at least, it was written by a former Apple genius, Joe Caiati. I probably butchered his name there. His first sentence is, "No one likes visiting the genius bar." I don't know if that's totally true. Some people probably like it. But basically the entire sum of the blog post is how to avoid going to the genius bar when you've got problems. He talks about software problems, user management issues, operating system, console, activity monitor, how to save time. He talks about some of the hardware, so what if we can't boot it up, what that little bung means. Now, this is all for Mac, of course. What can you do if it does not boot at all, if you're having Wi-Fi problems, peripherals, even a whole segment on the dangers that magnets can do to your computer and all the things that he'd seen over the years of being a genius with magnets causing all kinds of havoc. So just kind of a good how-to if you are a Mac user. You should probably grab this article and read through it. Just some good housekeeping or computer hygiene kinds of things. But just a nicely done article. Puts a lot of links in there to some Apple resources as well. So save yourself a trip and some of the headache, and some of these you can probably do it yourself rather than have the genius do it for you. This is a rather recent article, so it covers, you know, the modern operating systems.
That looks great. Since we don't have a genius bar in New London, I'm definitely going to read that article.
There you go. And not to diss our Windows friends, our PC friends, I found actually a very good article for Windows 8 in particular, Windows 8 and 8.1. 62 Windows 8 secrets you need to know. And it's not just secrets. There are some fixes here, and he goes into, you know, some issues with if you're getting blue screens or other error messages. But does talk about the basics, group apps and basic navigation, how to work through the lock screen, that kind of stuff. So a little love for the Windows people as well. So good stuff online if you just do a little searching, both extremely well written by knowledgeable people.
Perhaps Windows 8's best secret is to wait for Windows 10. I don't know.
I like Windows 8. So.
Okay. Not going to let me put it down.
Sorry. All right.
I'm with you, Sally.
Wells Insider. I just wanted to let everybody know that the latest issue of Shop Wells, the Shop Wells newsletter, is out. Winter 2015 issue. Every call worker, I believe, should be actually getting a copy, a printed copy. But there's also a digital copy if you're not on that mailing list. And Shop Wells is our cooperative buying program. And talks about specials in this particular issue. We've got a couple vendor changes, new vendors coming into the program. Used ShopWells to rent a car to go over to Michigan over the weekend. $15 a day for the rental through the ShopWells program. That is hard to beat.
That's a deal.
So it's well worth the effort. If you haven't been to the site in a while, take a look. We're actually redoing the site along with all of Wells.net, so look for a new site this summer. But all the programs are going to be there if you're looking for copiers, cell phone deals, computer deals, office supplies, all that stuff is available on ShopWells.
And if I could add that Chromebooks are now going to be available.
One of our newest vendors, Troxel, is a Chromebook vendor and very attractive pricing. And they actually throw in some different other things when you buy enough Chromebooks, like a cart or those kinds of things, for really good prices. So take a look.
Makes me think about Wells Tech Conference 2015, Martin, because I think a lot of those vendors are going to be there.
Yes.
Come and meet them all at Wells Tech Conference 2015, happening this summer, July 9th through 11th at Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center, Waukesha, Wisconsin. We're going to be there leading all kinds of different sessions, Martin, and soaking in the Wells Tech goodness. We'll celebrate Wells Tech podcast number 400 with the good folks at the conference. And one vendor I'm super excited about is Logos is coming, and they're bringing some good deals along with them.
Yep. Logos is one of our headline sponsors, and I think they are going to be offering a 20% discount on their products at the show, or at the when they present for the, they're doing a co-presentation in one of the pre-conference workshops on just how to use Logos. So in addition to all that learning, you're going to be able to buy some of their products at discounted prices as well. So Sally, some of those pre-conference workshops are beginning to fill up. What's hot right now?
What's hot right now? Google Apps is particularly hot right now, although all of the pre-conference workshops have registrants already, and we have very limited seating, only 30 seats per pre-conference workshop. So if you want to get in on Google Apps, this is your insider information, folks. You need to register soon because it's quite popular, apparently. But any of those pre-conference ones, get your registration in because those seats will be filling up.
Only $29 for those pre-conference workshops, so it's a pretty good deal.
Quite a deal. Our website is wells.net/wellstechconf, so head over and get registered today.
Nice. Let's go to our community feedback segment.
All right. A couple of picks and notes from Pastor Rob Gunther. First, he pointed us to a news article, and interestingly, being read to us from an app called Umano, so the link we'll have in the show notes is to the death of the 9-to-5 while we'll all work flex schedules soon. And I think this kind of ties into some productivity and other concepts that Pastor Gunther's been working through since he just recently had a productivity speaker at his Alaska conference that he attended. That would be my co-host, Martin. So
yes, I was up there.
He's on a kick, and he's got this article for us. He's got a zero inbox email game. So if you need to gamify getting your inbox to zero, apparently it's gotten some kudos from Time Magazine even. So check that out. And then lastly, Pastor Gunther shared with us a Kickstarter program for something that's just cool to us techie types. It's a smart projector that fits in any light socket. So they're basically have a really strong projector with LED lights associated, but you just screw it into a light socket. And there's all kinds of information about the development and design of the tool. And if you're interested, you can still get in on the Kickstarter. Unfortunately, it's not a cheap thing. So Founders Club is $349, Early Bird $369, Regular $399. So if you have a little techie money in your budget and want something new and shiny, perhaps get in on the Kickstarter here. I think delivery date is something like October of this year. So cool project.
Nice.
Fun to read about neat development. All right, next up, Martin, you had someone tweet you from CoMindWare, a project management software that we didn't make mention of last week on our show. It wasn't on my radar at all, but looks to be a pretty robust tool.
I've never heard of it either, so they apparently stumbled on our show about project management. That, hey, we're here too, so can't vouch for it, but what I did see in some of their advertising material looked pretty strong. Visually appealing and covered a lot of the bases that we had talked about in our show last week. So it is not free, so you have to kind of determine whether it's right for you, but I think you can try it for free, and it actually looked very very good. So take a look at CoMindWare.
Yep. Heavy on the collaboration there, which is a good thing.
Yep, exactly.
Great. And then finally, a couple of links which our friend Jason Schmidt shared with us via our Digo group. The first is to Cookie Caster, where you can build your own cookie cutter in under a minute. And I'm guessing that somehow 3D printing is part of this. Mm-hmm. I didn't dig real deep, but it sounds like a cool...
Yes.
A cool thing to do and a fun project. So here's some people's different cookie cutter designs that they've made on the site. Interesting. All right. And then finally, he shared a link to Grok, Learn How to Code from Your Browser, another coding site. So perhaps we are going to be talking, or maybe we already did. Maybe I need to add this to the math and technology conversation that we had last month. So this is a new site we'll add in the technology area. Thanks for sharing that, Jason. And that's all I got for you.
Very good. Thank you. Sally, next week we're going to be talking about a brand new blog called Heart to Heart, and one that's sponsored by MPH, right? And hopefully we'll have one of the bloggers to talk to.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn more about the efforts and also to talk about an upcoming webcast that they're going to be doing with several of the different authors involved. So I think they're hitting on some really timely topics for parents in the 21st century dealing with a different type of child to raise and should be of interest to our listeners for sure.
Sounds good. We have a featured video this week.
We do, Martin. I don't have my screen shared, but I mentioned it earlier when I was talking about 60-second recap. We actually have the overview video for Huckleberry Finn to give you a flavor of what to expect with 60-second recap. So kind of turn back the clock if you hadn't thought about reading Huckleberry Finn in a while. This will give you an idea of what students could experience if they made use of this website 60-second recap.
Probably not long enough to help them generate a book report, but a summary. So just saying, it's not a Cliff Notes kind of thing. So
no.
Very good. If you'd like to contribute to the show, whether that be a video, your own language arts apps or technology apps, science, we've got social studies coming up, you can contribute to the show, and we wish you would. Go to wellstech.wells.net, and you will find all kinds of icons across the top that will take you to nice places like Pinterest and Digo and our listserv, and of course the regulars, Google+, Facebook, Twitter. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, and that will get us the information that you care to share, and we'll share it with everybody else. So we would love to have you join the conversation, so please take advantage of those opportunities. Gail, thanks so much for joining us once again, broken foot and all.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Game, so really appreciate that. So,
thank you.
Blessings on your work there in New London. And our little lady from the South, thank you, Sally, for everything you do. Excellently done, as per usual. It is time, and I look right at my watch here. It's top of the hour. Time for us to say goodbye.
And, a dapper fella there.
Hope you will join us next week. Blessings on your week. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.